I'm trying to be a little bit of a time Nazi this morning, so I think, given the lateness of the hour, and I wouldn't have cut that last paper by a single sentence, I'd like to make sure that Chris and Ted get a good amount of time for their wonderful presentations. I think it may be that Q&A is going to turn out to be either limited or informal out in the halls. Chris Strachwitz, thank you so much for coming today. I'll even give you the mic.
Well,
thanks a lot.
Well, we all got to cut our time down somehow. I decided, since I'm going to deal with the small labels that sprang up in the South Texas or along the border, in the period after World War II until the end of the 78s. And it's an interesting knowledge that I'm sure all of you have, but to me it's really important that we deal with this vernacular music, because it's the only literature that the people really leave behind. I mean, other educated people, literary people, leave poems behind, they leave books behind, and so on. The people who create this music really don't. And the only artifacts we really have are these recordings. And there are some very, very powerful songs involved. I won't go into that to any great detail here, but the corrido in the Mexican music field is a very powerful ballad form that deals with every imaginable subject. And of course, border conflict has long been one of them. That is the conflict between Anglos and Mexicans along the border. But instead of talking a lot, I'm going to try to give you a little sampling of the richness in the music that was captured by these small enterprising people who produced these recordings. And so without further ado, I'm going to start right off. My first example, if you have the sheets in front of you, I've passed out two sheets. One of them has the Universal disc on one side and has my little spiel about my own collection activities and so on the other side. I won't go into that much further, except that in the 20s, one of the few independent labels was Universal, Discos Universal in El Paso. Most of the material in the 20s and 30s into the 40s was recorded by the majors, of course, Columbia, Victor, Vocalion, OK, and so forth. But after the war, all hell broke loose, and everybody discovered that the poor people were beginning to make money and they could actually afford records. And one of the first dollars they would earn was usually spent on a record. Many of them were played, however, on non-electrical equipment, on wind-up phonographs. So when you find them, like this very first one, the Orfeo label out of Monterrey, Nuevo León, it is impossible to find them in any kind of good shape. This particular one, which is number one in this extraordinary catalog of recordings, was found for me by a collector in San Antonio at a flea market. And it's also one of the most intriguing items because it documents a tradition that is still very strong in that region of northern Mexico. And it features two clarinetists accompanied simply by a bass drum, a tambora. Here's an example of a quadrille that was obviously still popular dance form in the late 40s. Anyway, this is the kind of tradition that's still going strong. About 10 years ago, there was a very popular group out of Monterrey, Nuevo León, called Los Clarinetes de Linares. Linares is a small town in Nuevo León, and it's still a popular dance form. At the same time, this is before the scourge of the accordion, we of course had the violin. And one of the great country fiddlers that was recorded first by the Bluebird Company in San Antonio in the 30s, thank goodness, made a few records after the war. This is for the Aero label. You'll find it in the middle of that first page there. El Ciego Melquiades, a blind fiddler who just had a marvelous fiddle style. Played many, many house parties. I had a most amazing phone call once from a woman who lived in Hayward. She said, "Is this Chris?" Well, she couldn't pronounce my last name. I said, "Yeah, that's me." And said, "Listen, I was born and raised in San Antonio, and my son, who went to UC Berkeley, found this record on your label called El Ciego Melquiades." She said, "I had to talk to you because my father used him all the time at our house parties where I grew up in San Antonio. I can't tell you anything more about that man, but he sure played some wonderful music for us in those days." And I said, "Thank you, lady. I wish I could meet you and wish I could visit this man who gave us this gorgeous music, but he left us these remarkable phonograph records. And I'm glad we can share those with the entire world." At this time, however, also the accordion had become really the dominant instrument. And I've got to add that Alan Lomax, when he saw the film that I did with Les Blank called Chulas Fronteras, I asked him afterwards, you know, what he thought of it. He said, "Well, Chris, it was very good, but that accordion." I said, "Well, Alan, this is what they all play." "Yes, I know they all play it, but that's not a Mexican instrument." I said, "Well, it was invented by a good old German, I guess." And it just went all over the world. And it's become the ideal instrument to accompany, especially the two voices, which is the most popular singing style. And we're gonna next listen to one of the first really powerful corridos that is very strongly against Anglos. And it was never listed in Dick Spotswood's catalog because apparently it was never recorded in the pre-war era, although the event happened in the late 20s. But when the small labels started up in South Texas, they would record all these ballads that happened that are still on people's minds. And just listen to, I'm just giving you a short excerpt, the words you'll hear very clearly, "Los rinches cobardes." Okay, most Spanish people speaking people probably won't know what rinches are. They're the Texas Rangers. And so they constantly sing, "Los rinches cobardes," the cowardly Rangers. Here's a little bit of Jacinto Treviño. The Falcon label was one of the big ones. It was run by a man named Ramiro. I forgot his name. Anyway, it'll come back to me. It was recently sold to EMI Records of Mexico, and the interesting thing was when it was sold, I asked him about it, and he said, "Yeah, Chris, you know, they only wanted my Norteño stuff, they left me with all my Tejano orchestras and all that stuff. All they wanted was the Norteño stuff, because this is their bread and butter. I'll never forget when we went to see Columbia Records in Mexico City, and you know, they were selling Julio Iglesias and all this stuff, and I kept asking them about Los Alegres de Terán. Oh, you wanted to find out about those hillbillies? That was basically their Spanish equivalent of it. Yeah, I know. We record them all the time. They're actually all bread and butter. And he admitted that. They outsell any of the monster stars that you've probably heard of. Anyway, there's this little label out of San Antonio, Alamo Records, and they recorded Lidia Mendoza's Sisters, amongst others. Here's just a little bit about the famous Sisters of Lidia Mendoza. They sing again a corrido about the El Guero Polvo is the blonde dust, I guess, and this was a cantina fight. Happened in San Antonio in 47, I believe. Good corrido gives you the exact date that it happened, you see, in 1948. Of course, the little accordion conjuntos became the most popular, and the orchestra people really resented them. When Les and I filmed Chulas Fronteras, I'll never forget going to a union meeting in McAllen, Texas, of union musicians. And the basic theme of the meeting was, what the hell are we going to do about these goddamn conjuntos? Here's four of them. They can fill the goddamn Corpus Christi Auditorium. This was shortly after Tigres del Norte had a huge hit with Contrabando y Traición. And they said, I don't think we can do anything. These guys are popular. They sing the songs that people want to hear. They can give them the whole music with the amplifiers for people that we, with our big, huge orchestra, can't do. So anyway, I'm very fond of the conjuntos. They have the real feeling for the music. But I also realize that there's a lot of good musicians who are trained musicians, and the Ideal Company, amongst others. Most of them were actually run by fairly conservative Mexican Americans, including Ideal Records, and they actually preferred the orchestras, you know, and the more genteel music. But they realized that the people out there really wanted the lowdown stuff. So here's an example of one of the orchestras that was recorded by the Ideal label. The leader was Pine Cáceres. I believe he's the brother of one we're going to hear a little later on, Emilio Cáceres, who was a wonderful violin player. He's a hot jazz musician. And here he is accompanied by Narciso Martinez on the accordion. He was the accordionist who was absolutely dominating the whole field of northern Mexico and southern Texas music. And together, it combined the audience who liked the genteel orchestra music and the perhaps lower class, if you wish, who liked the pure accordion music. So they would both come to these dances and enjoy this music. Here's a sample of a kind of a mixed group of an orchestra with an accordion in it. Cut it short. No. All right. a lot of the activity, of course, of this music was in South Texas and in northern Mexico. Of course, northern Mexico to a much lesser degree because people simply didn't have any money. On this side of the border, Mexican Americans had money, they were earning money, and they were willing to pay for records. But the music also existed, of course, very strongly in California. However, most of the immigrants from Mexico who live in California have always come from the west coast of Mexico, so you have generally a stronger influence from the state of Sinaloa with the banda, currently that big craze that's still going strong, of big brass bands playing. That is a typical West Coast Mexican tradition that has never gone to Texas. But there were Texans who went out to, especially in the 50s when the work in the field was almost done by Tejanos exclusively. Today it's almost done purely by Mexican nationals, most of them illegal, but the Republicans don't seem to be worried about that part of it. They just don't want to send their children to school. But the Texans were generally all over the place. They would pick your fruit and do all that work. They were mostly Tejanos. And one of the first recordings, this was the first recording ever made by Steve Jordan. He's kind of known as one of the more progressive far-out accordion players these days. And here he is. They had just won an accordion contest in San Jose, California, and the award was a record on the CIMA label. Here's a little bit of the first recording that the Jordan brothers put out. This was recorded in San Jose. The composer is really well known. Cucu Sanchez is his name. He's written a tremendous amount of ranchera music, which is basically the equivalent to our country music. And this was a very popular song at the time. There was a slightly different sound that came out of Monterrey, Nuevo León. Besides, of course, the very rural two clarinets that we've heard before, they combined an alto saxophone with the accordion. That became the sound where the accordion plays really tight with the accordion, with the saxophone. Let's listen to one of the best known groups from there, Los Gorriones del Topo Chico. They recorded on the Del Valle label. Wait a minute, is that the one I'm using? Yes, sir. Where am I going?
Marina Blanca.
Oh, except we have to skip the one in the middle there. Can we do that? I have one on the Corona label. I don't think we're gonna have, oh, we're still on the Hermanos Jordan. I guess it will have to go through. Here's Conjunto Longoria. Let's play the next one. He is a fine accordion player from South Texas who was actually born in Mississippi to a field working family. And he's very dark skinned and he encountered tremendous amounts of discrimination. He went traveling with the Mendozas. If you ever read the book that I did with Jaime Nicolopoulos on the Mendoza family, because discrimination wasn't only against African Americans, it existed just as much against Mexican Americans until the Civil Rights Law passed. Actually, somewhat before it, because the Second World War changed all that. We had some wonderful stories of guys who came back from the war and said, listen, I'm not gonna take this anymore. I had to fight over there. I'm just as good as this next gringo guy. And it opened a lot of Chicanos' eyes that they were just as good as anybody else. Anyway, here's a little bit of the polka sounds of Valerio Longoria. The polkas in the 40s and 50s, they still love the minor keys element in it. That has unfortunately pretty much disappeared. Okay, let's now go into the sound from Monterrey with Los Gorriones de Topo Chico. This is on the Del Valle label. Mr. Garcia ran this label. Most of the recordings were actually made in Monterrey, although when I went there and met him and his daughter asked me, how come you don't like Bob Dylan? How come you like this junk? And her father said to her, listen, girl, that's our bread and butter, this music. Don't kid yourself. This is what sells, Los Gorriones. Thank you.
check with Ted. Check with Ted because it, you know,
when do we have to quit?
We're supposed to quit at noon.
Let's start over. I believe those two are brothers. That's of course the ideal sound. I guess if you ever encountered musicians, especially duets, I was never aware of it, how torture it is to find out who's the ideal duet singer with you. I think in the hillbilly field, we're always mostly used to brothers doing it, you know, and they sort of naturally grew up with it. But I've studied, for example, Los Alegres de Terán. This is why I'm so interested in the Orfeo label, because they made all their first recordings for Orfeo. They later became the big act in this whole field. They were really the fathers of it, Los Alegres de Terán. I won't play your number, but I mean, they were just enormously popular. But I discovered that when they were recording for Orfeo in 1946 and 47, they were trying out different combinations of not only which bajo sexto player would work with whom, but the voices. The voices really slowly settled into place. Well, anyway, here's another. The next one is on the Everstate label, a small company out of San Antonio, and they recorded one of the most extraordinary hot fiddle players that ever came out of that area. He made a lot of wonderful jazz records for Victor and for, I believe, for another fine LP label that came out in the way in the 60s and 70s. This is one of his 50s recordings, Emilio Cáceres. He is the hot fiddler here. A little bit of dark eyes. Gotta have one by the great queen of Tejano music, the original, before Selena ever was seen on this planet. It was the great Lydia Mendoza, and she's still around. She was just at the Smithsonian convention that the Smithsonian put on, dealing with this music that I'm talking about, namely conjunto music, as it is generally known on the Texas side. It's generally known as norteño music on the Mexican side, because they say it's from the north. Its origins are still debatable. It was obviously the accordion came in there through the Germans, who had a strong hand in building up the industry, especially in Monterrey, Nuevo León. And in their commissary stores, a lot of people told me, listen, all they ever had was accordions there. We couldn't buy anything else. Those Germans wouldn't allow us. But anyway, here's Lydia Mendoza, if we can catch the next one a little bit of... This is a song that she recorded, written by Johnny Herrera, who owned the Gaviota label. He still does. He's a composer primarily.
Chris, I think this better do it.
Cut it out.
Okay.
I'm going to have to cut it off here. We're just going to fade out with Santiago Jimenez playing under my outgoing comments, because he's the father. Start playing. Just let the thing run. He's the father of Flaco Jimenez, who I'm sure all of you have heard of. And he made an enormous hit, really, with this kind of accordion music in the late 40s. But this just gives you a little survey of the kind of tremendous variety that was recorded by the little companies in South Texas. In most instances, I would say the material is lost unless you have good copies, which I've tried to preserve and which is now owned by my Arhuli Foundation. If you ever want to make any contributions, feel free to do so and pick up a flyer about my foundation on the table up here. And if you ever find any Orfeo records, I'll pay you well for them. Thank you.